Rock and roll. I got Abel Pacheco back on the Capital Racer Show. How are you doing, my friend?
Man, doing good. Thanks for having me, Ruben. I appreciate it, brother.
It's been good. Anytime, dude. I can't wait to catch up with you, dude. Capital Racer Show now brought to you by PitchDeck.com. It's one of Richard C. Wilson's companies, man. I was just telling you before the show that he's officially part owner of the show and part sponsor and helped me write a book and all kinds of other good stuff. So more on that as the show unfolds. But you, Abel, what have you been up to since episode 62 recorded about 2.5 years ago on the Capital Razor Show, man? What have you been doing?
Dang. When you were telling me it was that long ago, I go, shoot, that has been a long time ago. It feels like forever. And it was just recently, but more of the same, man. It's family time. I got my 4, almost 5-year-old, my 2, almost 3-year-old, and me and my wife are having a great time doing what we love doing, which is spending time with us and our family, building our real estate business, and just trying to acquire more deals and more opportunities for other investors to get into, man. So a little bit of podcast, a little bit of new deals. Our third fund number 3 is coming, probably opening soon. So all the things, man, all the things. I'm happy to jump into any one of those, but it's been a blast.
5 Talents podcast. I've been a guest on that ages ago when I used to work with my previous company.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So when I met you, I think we were talking about you had started as a passive investor and moved into active syndication with your friends and partners, Devin Elder and Ruben Dominguez. And since then, if I've been watching you close enough, you started a couple funds. You're continuing to do value add syndication. Originally, you had only been in San Antonio, and now you've moved across a couple markets in Texas. So tell me about before we go into funds, because I love to talk about funds, tell me about the types of deals that you are currently going after.
We've figured out a hardcore niche for us, which is I'm tried and true Texas, baby. We are part of the sons and daughters of the Republic of Texas.
The Lone Star State.
I know, man. The Lone Star State. We have a defender of the Alamo that my uncle traced back, did all the hardcore lineage, all the stuff, wrote some really good books about it. But Jose Luciano Pacheco was a defender at the Alamo. And because of that, we have rights into being sons and daughters of the Republic of Texas. So we're here in San Antonio. And I grew up in Corpus Christi, which is down by the beach, 2 hours south. My dad moved. He was a transplant. He moved from San Antonio to Corpus. So I grew up in beach town. But every weekend, we'd come and visit the rest of our larger family, all the Pachecos. Castellano Pachecos were here in San Antonio, and just this is kind of where we grew up. So I thought we should take advantage of our hometown advantage, a court advantage, if you want to say that. It's, man, South Texas. We've been investing in San Antonio, McAllen. We still haven't found our hometown Corpus Christi deal, but we're looking. We're invested in Austin. So we went a little bit north, and we also have some Dallas deals. So it's like, man, this is where we're at. This is where we live. Everything is a drive, a few minutes from our literal house. Or if we want to make a trip out of it, we can get in a car and drive to any one of them. So this is our area. I don't know if you remember on our previous conversations, it was really trying to figure out how to partner with the best possible people in our networks. We still do that today. And I found for us, scale has been had two ways. One, because we can go walk properties, underwrite, do analysis, make offers, talk with brokers in our hometown, literally 10, 15 minute, 20 minute drive from our house. Those are the deals that we try to lead because we're boots on the ground. On the flip side, I have a lot of partners that they are boots on the ground, 10, 15 minutes properties in McAllen and Austin and Dallas. And so for us, that's been our way to scale. It's like figure out how to go lead, sponsor our deals, operate them in our backyard, and then partner with people that are in the surrounding areas, people we know, like, and trust, people we've done deals with already many multiple times. And so for our investors, it's that deal flow that's allowed them to invest in the ones that we operate, and then the ones that they trust us to kind of have due diligence on our partners and our operation teams. I'm a general partner in those deals as well, but it's great to have that consistent deal flow. And then in addition to that, we've had a fund model, and this is we're launching our third fund models. Diversification, if for the truly, truly, truly passive investor. You just want to, I don't want to do diligence on 10 deals, even 4 deals. I just want to know that I worked with the team. I trust them. I know how they operate. That's our fund. And so we essentially put all of our deals that we land for 1 year period, and then we make that a diversification fund. So an investor that just wants to, likes all of them, but doesn't want to do diligence on 4 or 5 of them, they just put in a single check. And now every deal we buy over that year, 1 year at a time, will be diversified. That's been the model. And we have in that spread out 2 different areas. Again, part of the partnership is like, well, there's some people that are great at development, great at construction, great at project management. All that construction manager is like, dude, I want to be invested in that too. So we will, again, work with our partners that have done this 100 times. And so we launched a deal in Louisiana last year. That was a build to rent that's broken ground.
That's my deal, by the way.
you may or may know something about that deal, right, Ruben? We have 156 units that we're, God willing, breaking ground on this year. And it's just another deal. So, man, the cycles continue. That's trying to figure out good conservative deals with enough meat on the bone to have a good return for investors. And let's just keep doing deals. So that's the goal. That's what we've done. And I'll tell you about the goals. We want to know about them later. So,
woo. All right. So much to unpack there. Mm-hmm. One of the deals that you're probably talking about is the Foley, Alabama, 154 unit, 506C as in Charlie, subdivision development syndication. And we're really excited about that. And there's been some new developments on that. We have floor plans. We have been, I think that city has gone into a moratorium where no one else can build in that city. So we got that locked in. We got city engineering approved. And this particular deal is in an opportunity zone. So if we can figure out a way to hold it for 10 years, we can eliminate all the taxes 100%. So we'll talk about that more as the show unfolds or in future episodes. But I wanted to mention something that Brian Burke said when he came onto my show. He mentioned that I was asking him about funds, and he's like, well, see, when you have syndications, one-off syndications, your buyers, or I should say your investors, can have a wide variety of investor satisfaction levels. Because one deal, you may hit it out of the ballpark and get a 40% return, and another one might be kind of a thorn in your side, and you might only get like a 15% return. So I was asking him, what's the difference between one-off syndications and a fund? And he said, well, if you put all of these syndications or deals into one fund, it smooths out the volatility. Just like instead of being in the stock market roller coaster, you invest in real estate to get kind of something more stable. Well, when you put all these real estate deals, it's even that much more of a level of stability. And the whole thing, when you put all these deals into a fund, performs really well for everybody. But let's go back a little bit. I kind of want to dive into these original days when you were raising capital before you ever started a fund and kind of dive into a couple of things. One, how did you used to raise capital and partner with people in those days? And then what led you into creating your own funds?
Yeah, well, the way we partnered with people in the beginning was kind of simple. I looked at the literal people in my network, people that I knew, liked, and trusted. And the people with the most experience, my goal was to latch on or attach my cart to someone else's horse that had already done more than I had done. Somebody I knew was a good steward of capital, somebody I knew who had good track record of success. And that's what we did. That was my first partnerships. The way I found that person or people were, it was before this real estate run. I had knowledge of them. I knew them. They were friends or grew up together in tech. Saw their success in that world and others. And then at the same time, through that mindset, it was, wow, I was meeting other people, meeting others, and getting to know future partners that had success. So that was really the first way that I did that. Now, I was a passive investor, so I'm still a passive investor. I still deploy capital across deals. And when I do that, or when I did that back then, I learned through the process. I learned what was good, what was not. I learned what I liked and didn't like. And that helped me now today. Ultimately, when we're looking for a deal and I'm thinking about the returns that we're going to offer out, that's helped shape a lot of the design for a capital stack, equity structure, returns, how people want to be treated communication. And that's what we do today. The difference today is now that we have done like 15 syndications, including the fund, many more, if you count all of those together, but just general partner, one way, shape, or form, another, as an active participant in the deals, you have a little more track record. And now other people, I guess, would look to me and say, hey, you're the person in my network with the most experience. Can I work with you and learn from you? So that's how we've transitioned today. And then the way we found the fund was the model, exactly what you said, smoothing out some of the volatility for passive investors. When you look at diversification, there's a couple of different mindsets that I lean to. One was put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket. When people say, hey, I don't want to have all my eggs in one basket, I want to diversify. Well, one, you know, there's pros and cons to either. One of them is if you put your eggs in a bunch of different baskets, none of them are really compounding the way you're hoping. And if you want to create massive, massive wealth, most of the people that have done it don't diversify across 12 or 13 different asset types and asset classes and the stock market and bonds and IRA and four, and then, you know, real estate. They've had a lot of education in one path, one focus, and then they hammered it over and over again, and their wealth grew exponentially. So for me, I'm not a big fan of like having a true diversification across stocks, bonds, market, everything that you see today, crypto and all that stuff. I like a little bit of hedge. I am a little bit of gold. I am a little bit of crypto, a little bit. And then heavy, heavy, heavy on real estate, because that's where I've seen most of our wealth get generated, a creation is in real estate. So for investors that want to be in real estate as the focus area to build and multiply and amplify their wealth rapidly, but still have their eggs in multiple baskets, the fund was that mindset was, okay, let's put all our money in a real estate, but how can we get diversified? Part of it is we're in 15 deals. It's like, okay, there is a couple thorns in my side over the first few years, but the other ones are doing pretty well. So they kind of spread even each other out. Same thing with the fund for our passive investors. Hey, one deal has an issue. Other one's doing pretty damn good. So that starts to even the distribution out a little bit and volatility and says, oh, I'm still invested in something with good tax returns. Ultimately, people want, I want to be in real estate. I don't want to do any work. I want to get good tax returns and I want double digit returns on my money. Can I get that? And so that's what we're doing over and over and over again.
Yeah. Passive investing is pretty cool. No toilets, tenants, termites, landlording, or putting in baseboards. So if you are looking to get in, that's a great way. As a lot of the listeners know, which in fact, a lot of them are syndicators and aspiring authors and people that are scaling. And a lot of them might be curious about, how do I even begin to learn about funds? There's not a lot of books on fund creation. Every time that you talk to a syndication attorney, they're going to give you different advice about structures, about philosophies.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to determine, well, who should I select as the attorney? Who should I trust in terms of the fund structure? Should I get some business advice? Because a syndication attorney can't give me business advice. All they can do is really protect me and my investors from a variety of things and heed warnings about the possibilities of what happens within syndications. But they can't really tell you if you are even in a situation where a fund makes sense for you. I'm sure that there's some people that have gone to syndication attorneys and said, hey, I'd like to start a fund and raise $10 million. And the syndication attorney writes up the docs and hands it to them. And then the person never raises a dime after spending a bunch of money on docs. And this is from a lack of ability to capital raise, which a syndication attorney is not going to dissect your business and determine what kind of database you have. They're just going to do what you told them to do. So this is why it's really good to get some business advice from either existing fund managers and or other people that have done funds in the past, or even business advisors that help people create docs that aren't specifically syndication attorneys. Now, as you were navigating this crazy world of trying to figure out how to start a fund, what did you end up kind of focusing on to determine whether or not a fund even made sense for you?
So many things. A lot of networking, a lot of asking others what they were doing, trial and error, because I had error. Then there was looking at other people, other syndicators, other companies, what they were doing, the small people, I look at some people and I go, oh man, these guys are crushing it. They're in our network. You know, I see them everywhere. They have big conferences and big crews. I'm like, that's where I want to be. But actually in our world, they may be big fish, but we're big fish, small pond. There are larger institutions, larger entities outside of the broader syndication networking that are giving out way less return, way lower benefits, and raising billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm like, okay, so there are big and small to look at. And ultimately, I think it came down to me for like really trial and error, because I go, okay, I'm not an institution. I don't have 30 years of experience. I don't have a staff of 100 analysts that are looking at all this stuff. That's just not us. Nor were at the time, 2 or 3 years ago, nor were we the person with 30 deals, 40, 50 deals of experience. We're just at 15. I'm saying I got a little bit more experience than before. But when we did the trial and error, it was fund number one. Let's put our money in a larger institutional play and let's go see it have success. Well, I thought because it was a true institution that we're going to have tons of success. In fact, it wasn't the case, because our fund number one was fund number one. The question that was asked a lot of times was, have you done this before?
How many of these have you done before, right?
And the answer was none. This is number one. And I've heard the joke in our world, which is very serious. It's like, who are your first investors? It's friends, family, and fools. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it was like, well, shoot, who's going to get invested in that fund number one? And we were big plans. We're going to raise a lot of money. Man, quickly move on to fund number two to try to get through that. And we had our first year raised $1 million, which may sound huge to some people. In our world, it was a very small number. We were looking for 5 or 10. How do we do that? Well, when you hit 10% of your goal, it's like, well, that's not very successful. Let's move to the next one. When we went to fund number two, again, trial and error, I also didn't factor in different times. I factored that in now, but in the beginning, I didn't realize, this is 2019. So look back, the returns that were provided in 2019 are very different than 2020 during COVID, 2021 last year, now 2022 with the Fed moving interest rates up, and it changes the deal cycles and loan to value is different. No matter what you're looking at, you're always looking at a past performance and you're measuring yourself to somebody else. That's the key, is you have to measure yourself. You have to know where you're at today to launch the right vehicle. And then you have to look around and say, this is different than last year. It's different than the year before. What's going to be the right thing moving forward? And you have to be comfortable operating in this gray space, because the gray space is, well, I'm doing a blind pool fund. We're putting deals in there. Well, what are the deals? What do they look like? And what are the good returns going to be? And I don't know. I haven't underwritten them yet. So that gray space, that volatility, you've got to be comfortable with it first. You've got to know yourself and what you're great at. You've got to be able to leverage that. You've got to be able to turn it around and tell others, this is what we're going to be doing. It helps to have some experience. It's not necessary, but you got to start. And then ultimately it's like, man, it's going to require that you take a leap of faith somewhere through the process. And if you can't jump, you're never going to get started with number one, to much less go to number two, three, or some firms and organizations that have been around for 30 years. And they did a fund number one also just a lot of years ago, a lot of employees ago, a lot of cycles ago. And you have to get started. If you don't try, you never build anything. So you have to leap at some point.
Here's something to contemplate, guys. Because when I left my previous company, I was starting to have success with Capital Raiser Show and knew all these capital raisers, knew all these sponsors, and was asking attorneys, how do I make money putting these sponsors and capital raisers together? And they're like, you have to start your own fund. So I took the leap of faith and I went off to go launch my own fund. And that's when Andy McMullen approached me and he's like, dude, I heard that you left your company. Come join me. I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to go start my own fund. And he's like, dude, do you realize that if it's your first fund, you're going to have to create automations, branding, a new website. You're going to have to deal with the question, how many of these have you done before? And if the answer is zero, it's going to be an uphill battle. Why don't you just come join me, man? I've already done a bunch of funds. I need the help with automations and marketing and branding and all the things that you've learned from all the different places and your show. And we need the notoriety. And You have all these skill sets that we need. You can help us grow and then solve a bunch of objections. We'll pay for the syndication docs, and then you can ride this thing with us and help us grow simultaneously. And the more that I've thought about this over the last year, a lot of times when people are looking to scale into syndication from single family or small multis, one of their easiest paths of success is to partner with an existing syndicator. It's almost a requirement. And if you're looking to start a fund, instead of doing it the Abel Pacheco way, which is to start your own fund from scratch and trial and error, I might recommend that you consider partnering with an existing fund manager, which is exactly a representation of what I did. And if you're looking to do that, you can come join us or Abel. I'm sure he's looking for other partners in his funds as well. In fact, we are partnered on some deals together. This is a much easier path to take with less resistance. So I would suggest contemplate this. So you're in fund number two, and now you're talking about fund number three. Let's go back to this moment in history. What's going on with fund number three? What have you learned? What are you going to be trying to do with fund number three?
Basically, a Texas diversification fund. So awesome. We're hometown Texas, you know, battle proven here, and that's what we're continue doing. So focusing heavily on value add, multifamily, the staple for a lot of syndicators and multifamily is the value add play. And so that's what we're good at finding and underwriting and trying to win those and get them under contract. And so if we can successfully buy 3 to 5 deals a year, that's the goal. It'll be open for 1 year. The blind pool, I don't know what I'm going to find. We're going to go out and underwrite some deals, but it helps, like you said, to have a track record, because now fund two, I can point back and say, well, we had 6 deals in fund number two. Here are the deals. Here's what they look like. Here's the returns. Here's the projected performance. And this is what we bought last year. It is indicative of what we're going to look for this year. And then market volatility changes. Like, I don't control if the Fed keeps pushing up interest rates, and I don't control whether sellers are going to drop price or not. That's the part that's the extra hurdle, right? Is every year, I think you're going to find something different market cycle. That's fund three, is like figure out diversification, multifamily value adds, and Texas tried and true deals. And we may have an occasional diversification deal for our investors, and that's about it. But let's pull them all together, put all of our eggs in that one basket, and watch it. The diversification is deal A, B, C, and D. So that's the goal. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. We're giving away most of our profits. It's kind of funny. I'm in it to make as much money as possible. So that this is state that goal, right? We want to create as much wealth as we can, but we're buying deals in our fund that we're already the lead sponsors or general partners or co-sponsors in as the sponsor side of it. So diversification play is really, I think we're only taking about 5%. We're giving away 95% of our profits to our investors. Wow. Taking a placement fee, taking a asset management fee, but the profit side of the equity is turning it over to them. And that's what it gives us, the diversification. And then for us, we get to do more deals. And I think it's a good marriage for our passive investors of one deal at a time they can invest in if they would like to, or if they just want to put their capital in one deal that's going to be going across all the deals we buy. From 2022, probably of August, is I think when we're actually going to launch, till 2023 of July. So that's what we'll do.
Cool. I'll help you break this down a little bit, but I want to stop here for a second and let the audience, the capital raiser out there, the scaling capital raiser that may have raised a little bit of money or is looking to partner, has maybe a net worth of $500,000 to $1 million. They have a couple of choices if they're in this kind of situation. They can go and co-GP with an existing syndicator and have an ongoing duty in addition to bringing equity to the table. And then they're going to be married to that person in that ongoing duty for 5 years, let's say. Other option would be to start a fund that could then stroke a limited partner check into someone's syndication or multiple syndications. And as an LP, you don't have to have an ongoing duty in the syndicator's operations, but you do have to manage your own fund, which is a whole another can of worms that you have to get into, but you don't have to deal with the operations. You just have to manage your own investors and underwrite and do a couple other things to make sure that you're staying legally compliant within your own security, that is your own fund. Other option for a capital raiser is something that we actually wanted to do with you. I think we participated in a couple of different ways, but if I'm a capital raiser and I don't want a co-GP, I can join Abel Pacheco or Ruben Greth's fund, become a part owner of that fund, and that fund can then stroke a check into someone else's deal. I want to break down this particular nuance of what you're talking about, because I believe if I have seen your model correctly, you have a fund that invests into a lot of syndications, and then your own owner operator in your syndications, and that fund that you have concurrently with your syndications, if LPs want to go into multiple deals, that fund can invest into Abel Pacheco Syndication 1, Abel Pacheco Syndication 2, and 3, and 4, and 5. Is that the way that you run it?
So exactly. Yeah, yeah. I've got to.
That's a cool structure, dude.
Yeah, we've got the option for our investors. If you really want to do due diligence hardcore on one deal, and that's all you want to be a part of, then it's easier to do that one deal at a time, which we're operators and that's what we do. We offer those out to our investors. They get invested in one deal at a time. They like the market. They like the submarket. They know the comps. They know our value add. They believe in the way we're going to increase rents. They look at our plan and model for that one deal. They stroke a check. They're invested passively. And now they don't have to think about anything else that we do for the rest of the year. They like that because that gives them that the feeling of control as a limited partner. And I get the want and desire to have all of that control. I have other investors that are completely the opposite. They have more money and less time. What they're trying to buy back is time. They don't need control. They have enough active capital coming in. A lot of business owners, a lot of entrepreneurs that we're working with, a lot of high caliber tech salespeople or executives. I came from tech, so I end up working with a lot of them as well. They earn so much at work and their time is spent from 7 a.m. to about 6 p.m. at night, managing large teams, P&Ls, budget. You know, they're either entrepreneurships or heavy responsibility cycles at work. And that's their active capital. So as they create it, the last thing they want to do is go learn how to do due diligence. They don't want to read ebooks. They don't want to watch a bunch of podcasts. They're like, no, I already made money. I'm trying to go to the house at 6 p.m., turn my mind off and spend some time with my family and friends. And that is where those investors are like, look, I've heard you. I understand your model. I understand. I've done due diligence on you. I've talked to referrals and talked to other investors, et cetera, et cetera. I'm good with you. Can I put my money in here and you'll invest for me? And then the question is, how much are you trying to place this year? And sometimes it's $100,000. Sometimes it's $500,000. Sometimes it's more. And depending on the level, they can put it in the fund and know that whatever we get into, their capital is going to be allocated across many multiple deals for the year. And that's a set it and forget it. I feel comfortable with it. They're still part of the deal. They still get the cost segregation, accelerated depreciation benefits. They still get good returns. They're still owners. They still get the K-1. All of that part is there without having to do due diligence on 6 deals, 7 deals, and to choose 3 or 4. Basically, they trust us. And then that's a benefit for some people. Some people is the opposite. So wherever the mix is in there, for us, we get the benefit of providing options to investors that feel right for them. Maybe we're one syndicator that they want to be invested in Texas, and the other deals, they want to be in North Carolina, Atlanta, or somebody else, and they choose somebody else for that market. But this is what we end up serving our investor base pretty well, I think. So we're excited.
Man, we dove pretty deep into funds. We were supposed to talk a little bit about apartment educators. I got Ruben Dominguez coming on, so we'll spend a little time on that show talking about that.
Yeah.
But we need to jump into the lightning round. So I'll start with this question, brother. Best vacation you've ever taken?
Definitely Cabo San Lucas was pretty damn good. It was the honeymoon for me and my wife. I love Cabo, beautiful waters. And I think it had something to do with the resort. I'm not a big adventure person when I go travel. I'm like, is this all inclusive? And just sitting at the beach and the pool and the hotel being served, that was pretty damn good. So it's probably that one.
All right. Can you share real quickly any real estate war stories?
In syndication, I'm living one right now. If you've ever gone through HUD 221 D4, It is, they say, 9 to 12 months to get a loan approval. It is due diligence, like with the rubber gloves on every partner and every market feasibility study and all of your plans and all of your construction. And that's what we're doing is ground up construction, HUD. It is one of the hardest. We were expecting to lock this loan during COVID time, and it didn't happen right at the beginning. And right around COVID, we realized, shoot, this is going to be really hard. Let's start this 221D4 process. It is going on month 13 or 14-ish. Ooh. Just to get the loan approval. It's probably my hardest, and that is uncomfortable conversation with investors, especially since we missed our mark. But man, we just keep battling through it, and I think the perseverance, the determination, the willingness to like keep going, I think is where a lot of other individuals that if you have a hard time in that area, persevering and keep going, that is where you want to partner with somebody else, just to like the doggedness to keep pushing through. And ultimately, like win or lose or draw, no one's giving up. And that's the part where you need to have some of that on your team. If it's not you, grab somebody and grab hold of them, because somebody's got to finish that through. No matter what situation, there's a story for you right there.
Keep grinding through that, brother. All right, next question. Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
A lot of prayer for me. It's scriptural for me, and then it's mantras out loud. So reading the word in the morning, saying it out loud at night, and then putting it on a note card, pulling it out of your back pocket at the roughest times. And there's something about whatever that mantra is for you or scripture is for you. I'm Christian, I'm faith-based. It's like, man, do not be afraid. I'm with you. It's like, okay, well, I'm afraid a lot of times. I'm worried a lot of times. I'm stressed a lot of times. So having something out there to really hold on to, reading it, verbalizing it, morning, afternoon, night, well, it sinks into your subconscious.
Yeah.
And you start to act and think like whatever it is you're reading. One of the other books that I love doing it was with The Greatest Salesman in the World. I'll persist Og until Mandino. I succeed. Cool. Yeah, Og Mandino, right? So originally, that's the way I deal with limiting beliefs is when that old, ugly, lying voice says, yeah, you're not good enough, or why did you do that? Or you made it, you're always gonna make these mistakes, or you can't push through, or whatever it is that you're dealing with. Those are my voices. It's like, I need something to put that thing at bay and say, man, you're a freaking liar, bro. I have something else that's bigger for me, and there's pushing me, and we'll just continue on. So that's, hopefully that helps a little bit somebody.
That's good. All right, a few more questions here. Favorite aspect about being a podcast host of the Five Talents podcast?
Yeah, baby. How to build wealth like the 1%. It's the goal is for me, my favorite part is to learn as much as possible from everybody I'm interviewing. I get so much wisdom, so much knowledge, so much nuggets. We've recorded 200 plus episodes, and I'm excited for somebody who gets to dig into those. I took the most value.
Yes.
I asked the questions that I wanted to. I took really copious notes through the process, just like reading and repeating out loud. I was asking the questions, taking notes and learning. And that is probably the best benefit of being a podcast host for me.
That is amazing. All right. So quick answer on this one. Best way to raise capital from your perspective.
I think the best way to raise capital is to realize you've been raising capital for all your life. Everything you've done to this point has enabled you to raise capital. You have raised social capital to this point. If you've never asked anybody for money on a real estate deal, just realize every action, every cycle, every promise, everything you've delivered on professional, personal, your integrity, your character. I would gather that most of the people that are probably listening to your show are just like you, Ruben. They're hardworking. They're sincere. They're genuine people that aren't out to get somebody. They really want to do great by their investors and for their deals. So if you look at that mindset, if this is you listening, you've got a track record of years and years and years and years of success in your own personal world. You need to tap that, and you need to realize some of those people, it's not about getting money from them. It's about helping them. Most of the people that we work with, the people that have invested with us, they're like 90-95% of them before they moved their multifamily syndication had never diversified out the side of the stock market, their IRAs, a work program. And knowing that now, we know they don't get good returns. They don't get the benefits they want. There's no tax benefits. So you're educating those people around you into a better way to invest. It's not asking them for money. They trust you already. That's why they're your friends. That's why they're your network. You've done good work in all your areas. So that just tap the social capital that you already have now and start there, because it's a great space. It's a great space.
Last question. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
Yes. I didn't know this was one of your questions. So one time me and my buddy Benjamin Resendez. So we were in his car. I was moving from San Antonio to Corpus, and man, I felt literally, if you know, like the hand of God move our car over. We're driving on the highway and we missed an exit. And my buddy goes, "Oh, I missed the exit." And he turned his car super fast. We were in the one side of the lane and he moved all the way over. There was a construction concrete barrier. That's why he missed the exit. And I felt like we were already past that concrete barrier. And when he turned over, kind of felt like the moved our car just a little bit back on a highway going 70 miles an hour. How do you pause time? But he looked at me and goes, "Did you feel that?" And I, "Yeah, dude, I absolutely felt it." Wow, he goes, "Did you feel after we stopped shaking and pulled over?" And he said, "Yeah, I felt that. I believe it too." So I was like, thankful. That move was me moving from one city to another. We started our first business at that time and he was helping me move. And that was the start of San Antonio to Corpus Christi. We launched our first business that was very successful when we were in our 20s. So I was excited. Thank you, Lord.
Great answers on that part of the show. I love lightning round, man. That's good stuff. All right. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review. Shout out to Legacy Acquisitions and to our sponsors, Good Egg Investment Syndication Pro, Apartment Educators. That's your company. And the Family Office Club and PitchDex.com. All of our sponsors' deals, including $1,000 off the Real Estate Accelerator Capital Raising Program, are at CapitalRaiserShow.com. Check it out to see what other deals we have. Abel, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
Go to our website, www.5talents.capital. You can find all our past deals, our investor portal and some videos and our ebook and our podcast, all the good stuff. Go to 5talents.capital. Look forward to connecting with you.
Rock and roll. All right. Last question of the day. Do you have any last parting words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser and or multifamily syndicator as they scale on this journey?
You got to get started. Don't get started until you know your end run, your end goal. Have that in mind and then be flexible when the end goal changes, because you're going to get started and realize, oh, this is probably not the right direction. I need to make some alterations. And then as that happens, observe what's happening, orient yourself to what's going on, make a decision, act, and then measure. Did I win or lose? Did I win or lose? Every time you take another action, was this right or wrong? Was this right or wrong? And then keep adjusting and keep taking action. Make it happen.
Phenomenal stuff, dude, man. You're one of like my favorite syndicators. Love doing business with you, dude. So I look forward to following your progress and doing some more deals, brother. Enjoy the rest of your day, my friend.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Ruben.
Woo!